everyone. Welcome. Hello, Dogtown. This is our...
Let's do one stage.
One stage. We're taking photos right now. Real official.
Let's do one more stage, Helen.
Oh, Ellen's right here.
Okay, Helen. No picture.
Something more organic.
Okay, everyone, start introducing yourself. Hello, Dogtown.
I like that.
Okay. We're really excited to be here for our episode.
Thank you.
Our premiere episode after our premiere. So exactly. I just want to say congrats to everyone that we released publicly released our Hello Dogtown season or in podcast. And I just want to say
people are loving it.
Yeah. Thank you, people.
So far, so
yes,
good.
Yes, people are loving it.
Yeah, keep loving it, please.
Yeah. How does it feel, Nathaniel, Helen, to be official podcasters?
You know, it's very inspiring. You know, it's like it's allowed me to see things that, you know, I've been scared of doing. And, you know, that this is an opportunity for me to not only just, you know, get on the podcast and speak about homelessness, but it's also like an experience of learning how to be a podcaster.
Yeah.
You know? And so we're learning a lot of new things.
Learning so much. Yeah. Definitely been an experience for
me. One thing that I really appreciate just listening to some of the podcast episodes is for once we're really hearing the experiences and the stories and even like the thoughts of youth who are at our center, who are, you know, who are unhoused or experiencing homelessness. And it's been really, really inspiring. And so I just want to like thank you all for like doing this podcast because I think it's reaching a lot of different communities.
Exactly. We keep it real here. That's one thing.
Yeah.
At least I do.
A little too real because I think there was some cussing in there.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
we keep it real.
That one was a needed
cuss. We're live from Dogtown.
Yeah. It's a PG-13 podcast.
yeah, we put the E
guy,
on the
that
side.
That guy was a douchebag, so I mean,
wait,
I'm not worried.
Okay, wait.
The guy who literally
dropping the T. Go back and listen to episodes.
Whole housing. Just for his own purpose, like he canceled like
the guy that's
housing
is suing the bridge housing that's being
in Los Feliz.
Yeah, he sued the development of a bridge housing site, so it just crushed the whole project in its tracks.
Just to clear it up, that's the guy that he's talking about.
So anyways, let's go around though and introduce ourselves. Who wants to start?
All right, so what's up, everyone? You already know who this is. This is Nathaniel Gorums, why did I put my last name in it? But who cares? All right, just follow me on Instagram, I guess, then now.
Whatever you want.
And yeah, I'm excited for today, and I'm going to pass it on.
Thank you. My name is James, and I'm super excited to be here. I work at Spy currently, and that's me.
Yay.
What's up, everyone? I'm Andrew. I'm back.
Andrew, guest number one.
Super excited to be back. I also work at Safe Place for Youth with James, and I manage our host home program here.
And as I've said before, my name's Carlos, and I'm also a employee at Spy. I'm a case manager.
Good morning. I'm Helen. Safe Place for Youth.
Cool. Robin's here, and welcome to Hello Dogtown. So today we have James and Andrew here as our guests, and we're going to have a roundtable discussion, an in-depth discussion on a topic that's super important, we think. Nathaniel, do you guys want to kick it off on what that is or something?
So like, I guess the big topic right now that we're going to be talking about is focused around LGBTQ+ youth that are experiencing homelessness. And, you know, Andrew and James are going to give us a little more insight and, you know, some of the causes of why these people might be going into homelessness, what's the research, like what's the data, the facts, and what can we do to support as allies, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, one thing I learned over this weekend, I went to like this awesome like hippie festival, and I realized, you know,
it's
we're all part of the same like, you know, universe. We're all in the same. At the end of the day, it's like if I let you down, if I let you like go into the wrong hole, I'm being affected in a bigger picture. And so we want to make sure we're all moving in the right direction.
Well,
Yeah, those hippie festivals will do that too.
Yeah, yeah, they're good for looking at the big picture.
I'm glad that you went.
Wish every day was a hippie festival.
Only at Spy. Only at Spy.
Why don't we start with James and Andrew? Can you guys introduce yourselves and maybe give us a little bit of your background and why you know, we invited you to be a part of this?
Yeah, totally. Thank you. So James here. I kind of started in social work as a peer, and that was in Colorado. And so much of my heart is in that space, and I was able to connect with the University of Denver. And from then on, I have been working on quite a few different research projects, which has been amazing to be involved in them, and some that have centered around LGBTQ plus youth experiencing homelessness and LGBTQ youth of color experiencing homelessness. Myself, I identify as seriously queer, and so
seriously.
I love that. And so I think it's been interesting to be in these spaces and having experienced homelessness myself, and then now being on the service provider side of that and being on the research side of that. It's been an amazing thing to observe and be a part of. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. That's my lens right now.
And James, before Andrew goes ahead and introduces himself, how would you describe queer for those folks who may not know what that term means? They probably hear it, but they probably don't necessarily really understand the definition of what queer is.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking, Helen. I think that's a really important question. I think that it's different for everyone who uses it. That word has been steeped in all sorts of kind of prejudice, and has a history of being a word that was used in an oppressive way. And now people are using it to empower themselves. I am one of those people, so I haven't necessarily fought to use this word in the same way that some people have in the past, right? But the way that I step into my queer identity now is as someone who doesn't necessarily define myself by either lesbian, gay, trans, bi. I have navigated different elements of those during my life. And so for me, queer encompasses a more fluid expression outside of a binary. So that's kind of like within the gender side, I can call myself queer, and that feels good to me. Also in terms of like sexuality, queerness comes up, because again, that allows you to not necessarily have this binary expectation of like your sexuality, and you're able to explore it with more fluidity. Although within that, it actually might be more stable, right? But you might feel open to and part of. I say, you know, queerness is something that's political. Queerness is something that is radical. Queerness is something that is individual. A queerness is something that is like a group too. So it's all these things. It's not neat. I'm not sure whether my definition is great, but I don't know if Andrew has.
I love it. That.
No, I love the definition too, you know.
Yeah.
It expresses just how, like, sorry, Andrew.
No, go ahead.
It just expresses how, you know, that queer can really just be defined according to one's experience, one's story, you know. And I feel like that's very impactful when you get to meet somebody, because you guys each have like a different, you know, meaning to it. And it's very nice to see, you know, the different definitions that's out there, because like you mentioned, you know, it's a fluidity of many expressions. And
yeah. I love that definition, James. I think it just made me think so much of like my life and how I identify. And in one like simple way that a youth kind of like described it to me is not of the norm. Right. So not in this heteronormative mindset or paradigm that we're often told. It's anything else other than that. Right. And it's whatever we make it. It's fluid. It's flexible. It's our own. It's given me so much more power. James, I love the story that you shared on how you got involved with LGBT and homelessness. I actually was also a peer. I actually worked at a queer youth center when I was a transitional age youth. I was 22, 23, working at a center. And the youth who I worked with actually taught me about queerness. They were like, you know, it is such a derogatory term for some, and historically. And so I grew up not wanting to be identified with that, especially identifying as a person of color, mixed race. In the Filipino and Mexican society, queer is something that we don't talk about. So just kind of working with the youth at the center and them owning their identity, that really inspired me to own my queerness. And so ever since then, I've identified as queer. And so that's how I started in this work as well. I started off as a youth at the center. And then I got introduced to research, LGBT research. I started doing a lot of research with queer teachers of color, particularly because that was who I was. And then I got connected at USC, focusing on youth homelessness, queer, because we know that a lot of youth experiencing homelessness are LGBT and are queer. And so I've seen those overlaps. And that's actually how Robin and I got connected. That's how I got connected to you. James, actually, I met before you even worked for SPY, because we're also doing research on our host home program. And so I think there's something very powerful about being a service provider, being a researcher, being queer in this space. And so I'm so excited to have this dialogue with you all.
Yeah.
So needed. So maybe why don't we go ahead and get started? I know that James is like an expert, and if maybe we can start with some of the some of the causes, right? Or some of the...
Yeah, James, you and I met through research. That's kind of my main gig-ish type of thing. And I think one of the things we want to just like ground this conversation in why this conversation is important. We talk a lot about the intersection of homelessness and queerness and LGBTQ identity. And so as someone that's like, as for all of us, folks that maybe have been in the youth homelessness world, it's something that we've talked about a lot and think it's not necessarily like new information for anyone here, but for anyone that is not in that group, like let's kind of ground that situation.
Yeah, totally. So like just to throw maybe some facts and figures out there so people can get like maybe a better picture or like some sort of quantifiable image of the sort of makeup of youth experiencing homelessness in terms of their identities. So it's actually the case that someone is 2.2 times more likely to experience homelessness as a youth if they identify within the LGBTQ community. 20 to 40% of youth experiencing homelessness right now are actually LGBTQ identified. So that figure actually even it gets even stronger when you start introducing more intersections of identity.
So, and I know, I think sometimes it's hard to put a number if we're trying to like, I don't know, comparing to like a high school or maybe housed youth, like what those rates would be. Does anyone know? I've heard like 10% or less, like just, you know, the how 40% is so much more,
I've also heard 10%. I haven't got that in front of me, but I've heard 10%.
I think I've also heard that that's like a, what is it called? A
underestimate?
A lower number.
Yeah. Like the low
margin. And that's what I also wanted to mention is like, this is self-reported, right?
Totally.
And how many folks are not actually reporting that they identify as this identity based on a whole bunch of different factors.
Absolutely, too. Yeah. And I think like that's one thing that we always need to ground like research and data and statistics in, especially with, in the beginning when we were talking about like defining queer and like the fluidity and the, you know, the complexity of individual identity, right? So it's like, you know, putting people in categories and like check marks is always complicated, and then blah 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 research complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And also like that group, the LGBTQ group, is normally treated as this homogenous group, and they have very different needs within that group. So, you know, some of those statistics might be like an over reflection or under reflection of some of the needs of some of those individuals within those groups. Like for example, let's talk about a shelter environment. Someone who identifies as transgender going into a shelter environment is going to have a very different experience than someone who comes in identifying as gay or lesbian. And that is something that, you know, the current research is not broken down, right? We haven't yet delved far enough into the different experiences within this community to really understand what's going on. And that's one of the reasons I've been a part of a new research team that's aiming to kind of like look at the different experiences of people within this group and get a better idea so that we do have like statistics that even though are going to be self-reported, and that do a better job of reflecting like the experiences within that group.
And that's why I also think it's so important for there to be queer researchers. So folks like James, myself, folks who are actually identify as the same, it's so important that we have queer researchers collecting this data, because too often do other folks from other communities will come and research about a certain community that maybe they don't connect or identify. And I think it's so powerful that James is doing this type of research, because, you know, when I was doing research at USC and I was at the LGBT Center, they were just like, you know, I'm so much more comfortable telling you about my experience and being honest about what I need.
The participants
in the research project versus some white, middle-class, straight male who doesn't identify as their experience and they're not just as open. So I think it's very, very important that folks like you, James, are doing this type of work.
Yeah, and one thing too is like I can see your point with that, because it's like, you know, when I, every time I look at, you know, data around African Americans, you know, even like facts or whatever, like history, you know, it's like you don't really see it because it's being told in another person's point of view. So exactly. It's kind of like it's important to have, I guess, both sides and then see like what's the missing link between this person's interpretation and your interpretation, because it's just like, yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And it speaks so much to this word that is, just the topic of so much of my conversation right now, whether it be with my friends or with strangers or with members. We call the young people who come into Safe Place for Youth members, actually, just to be clear on that. It's the word privilege, right? And that is something that I think, as you're talking about, like, you know, it's so good that like your identity is opening these doors for people to be able to connect to you more. And when you talk about your experiences with race and ethnicity, and you're like, oh yeah, history is being told from this completely different perspective. Like, it speaks to at what point can we deconstruct privilege? And as people who might be white and middle class, still be able to be part of this discussion? Or how much space do we need to be able to give for the people who have been, you know, quietened and haven't had the opportunity to be able to tell their own stories, right? And that part, I think, for me is where I get super, super passionate. And it involves me as a white person stepping back a lot.
Yeah. Thank you so much for mentioning that, James, stepping back. And I think what's also added to that is like, how do we also support and train and educate and kind of like, for me, example, like as a queer researcher of color, like I would remember asking my mentor, like, hey, I want to be a researcher of color, a queer researcher of color. How can you utilize your white privilege to teach me the skills that I have not had access to, or even engage in conversations or have me at the table in which I would have never been introduced to? And so it was just thinking about that differently. I think that that's how we can utilize one another so that we can basically move forward.
It's just such a complicated talk. I was like, oh, I have so many thoughts on this, and we could just get really into the systemic
tell us a little bit more about the data that you have. You know, I know there's I'm just looking at it right now, and it's like, wow, that's a lot of data. So would you like to break it down for us and just let us just give it to us?
5, 7 So yeah, exactly. Yes, I can definitely do that. I think it might help us. A lot of what I'm looking at a computer screen right now, and I brought up some of the results and different statistics we have around the experiences of LGBTQ youth experiencing homelessness, and it's very colorful, and so that's not something I can necessarily translate across this microphone.
Well, we can share a link or something later.
I would love to be able to do that, but it's quite interesting because I'm looking at like there's some statistics just to kind of like, I don't think we can really talk about LGBT and queer experiences without talking about race. I think race does need to come first. So I can speak to that a little bit. Youth who are Black and LGBTQ actually are 16% more likely to experience homelessness, whereas white and LGBTQ folks are 8% likely. And then that moves down when you get rid of the queerness. So Black non-LGBTQ folks, 7%, and white non-LGBTQ folks, 4%.
Is this from a study that you were involved in, or is this the Chapin Hall?
This is the Chapin Hall.
Chapin Hall. Yeah, okay, great. Yeah, they did the Voices of Youth Count, which was one of a national study that's really, it was really needed when it came out. I think like when they released that study and started that study, like there had been no good estimates or national estimates on youth homelessness for like 10, 15, 20 years. So this is really good, valid stuff. The people that worked on that team are really great. So
One thing I like about this graph, James, and we definitely have to send out a link because I'm just a visual learner. So I'm like literally looking at the graph right now. One thing that I really like about it is, one, they put the first layer of race, right?
Yeah.
And then they kind of show how being Black definitely increases your chances of being homeless.
Yeah.
And then they add the layer of being LGBTQ, which then highly then increases your likely, your the likability of being homeless. And I think that that visual right there is so, so necessary to talk about and to identify. And so I think that, you know, for me, I train hosts on, when they host young people into their home, I want to show them the statistic. Yeah,
you should.
Yeah.
So, I want to show them. And one thing too about the Voices of Youth Count and stuff that we're talking about, this is the likelihood to experience youth homelessness too, right? That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, so 18, 20 to 25 or under 25.
This is under 25. Under 25. Yeah.
And I know that a lot of these statistics and kind of likelihoods, they continue as people are not youth and into the adult. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that the majority of people that are experiencing chronic adult homelessness here in LA and most everywhere are Black and brown folks. And then there's also a higher likelihood, I think, of queer as well. But I'm not exactly sure on those statistics. But I want to focus in, though, too, about the youth component and how these data might be different from that broader thing. It translates, continues. Yes. It's just, you know, marginalized communities are impacted by homelessness, of course.
Yes, I mean, and that includes undocumented folks too, and just like socioeconomic considerations as well. So so there's all these intersections happening. And yes, they do happen with our adult population experiencing homelessness. I think something that the youth are people who have different and specific needs that are different. When you think about just developing as a human being, when you're in your teenage years or as you're growing out of your teenage years into adulthood, you are developing, like your brain is
forming.
And
that frontal lobe.
Exactly.
That pesky frontal lobe.
That piece, right?
That fancy word.
I think it's interesting because you might be doing things still for the first time. You might be hearing words for the first time. You might be trying on different styles and different ways of being and meeting new people, right? All this is happening at a young age. And on top of that, so you have this whole identity development happening in a completely different way than you do as an adult. And that can be a really vulnerable experience. And you haven't necessarily been held by a lot of there's so many systemic the system level oppression that happens, right? Mm-hmm. That the structural oppression that means that it's so hard to have been supported through this process. And so a lot of the youth are people who are really close to the trauma of being rejected. And that's not to say that rejection doesn't happen further down the line. It's just to say that they are very close to the initial impact of realizing oneself in the world and not fitting in.
I think that says a lot about what is happening in that time in someone's life. And just like your brain not fully developing, like that could impact, you know, have a huge impact on what your life is going to be like afterwards.
And imagine if you don't have like a community or like a group where you like bounce ideas off of or share these experiences or get reflections. I mean, I'm just thinking about that moment in my life that you were just describing, James. And I just remember me always checking in with who I call my sisters, right? Mm-hmm. My gay best friends who are like my chosen family. And we would always share experiences, sexual experiences, things that maybe we experience like discrimination. Like, are you feeling that? Even coming out, like me and my sisters, like I seen her come out to her parents and we were there for each other in that moment. I just remember like how critical that was for my development and how, you know, not many queer youth have that privilege, going back to that privilege. And that's why I think it's so important for spaces like this and the LGBT Center, because we need to be able to find that community. That's really what helped me survive really through those moments, so that I can be proud of my queerness. And then that's how I know that I want to be there to support other folks through that process.
Yeah.
And while you were speaking on like community, the one thing that I was thinking of is like, at that age, I feel like we all need validation, and you finding your group that's like you is, I would say, the most healthy way of getting validated in who you are, and just like you said, feeling good about who you are, and
just not feeling different, right, or weird. I mean, yeah, we are queer, but you know, that's a beautiful thing.
Digging deeper, when you mentioned rejection and just that sense of acceptance, like going out into society and not having that community there for them, I would like to bring to light some of the biases and stigmas that you all will have probably advice in, which we can break, you know, out in society. So maybe you all can tell us some of those biases and, like, you know, just enlightening people on.
My favorite one is Sir Madam, and that is the words that people say when they see me sometimes. It's Sir Madam, and it's become one word, but I think that...
In the Filipino culture, we say Ma'am Sir, so maybe we might want to bring that in.
I think it can be anything, because queerness, the difference between how I see race as so important to this conversation and queerness as so important to this conversation is queerness can be an internal identity that isn't worn on your skin. I happen to dress and present in a way where people might be like, that person might question their gender. But I have a friend who identifies as a person of color, and what she said, when I walk into a room, people see my blackness before they see my queerness. And so that is why I think it's interesting when you talk about these biases, because as someone who is queer, I could, if I was not feeling, if I hadn't done some of the work that I've done, I might dress in a more societally acceptable, I don't know, I might camouflage. Basically, and I could, and I'm white, and you know, that it might make my life, I don't know, horrible, but for me, but I do have that ability to some extent, because some other queer people in my position would argue that they don't, and it's totally because of the way that I see my queerness, whereas some people are like, no, I do not have a choice, and this is where I'm at, and that's totally legitimate. So I just want to point that out. But I think it's interesting when you go, it's from walking into a room and someone saying, hey, ladies, and you feeling completely shut down, or when a quote-unquote gentleman opens the door and thinks it's proper for you to walk in front of them, and you're like, but that actually really undermines my identity, because you're not doing this to be kind, you're doing this in a kind of like a male posturing kind of way. Or it can be, I didn't get the job because my legal name didn't match and they thought that was fishy. Or it can be so many different things that we experience as someone who identify as seriously queer, and for me, I have identified as transgender. So for me, I still have elements of that which play into my everyday life. When I wake up in the morning, it's like, where am I going? Am I going to be safe? What clothes do I need to put on?
Exactly.
You know, and that I think is like something that, you know, hopefully we can help people to understand so that they have more compassion for. It's been a slow process, and it's so much better than it was like when I started on a hormone treatment, and that was not even seven years ago. But when I started that, things were very, very different from they are now. They even have medically like changed the way that testosterone is used. And so there has been so many advances. So I'd also like to put that out there too. We're nowhere near where we need to be.
Yeah. Thank you so much, James, for mentioning that. I think something that James mentioned that I want to mention or identify is this idea around passing, straight passing, if you will. The mere fact that when we wake up and we have to debate, right, in our mind, how am I going to dress? What color am I going to wear? I remember doing that so much, not only when I was younger, but even as an adult, as a teacher, I would remember that, like, am I going to dress more masculine today, or am I going to dress more feminine, and then have to kind of defend that or address that, right? I remember one time I was a middle school teacher, and one of my students came up to me. Actually, it wasn't even one of my students. It was just a classmate of my students. And they go, "Hey, mister, are you a boy or a girl?" And I go, "I identify as a male. Thanks for asking, though. What about yourself?" And he's like, "What the fuck? I'm a man. I'm a boy." I was like, "I just want to ask." I was like, "I appreciate you asking me how I identify, so I want to ask you the same." And in that moment, he looked at me like, "What the hell?" But he was like, "Whatever." You know, like, he's a middle schooler. But in that moment, I was like, we need to get into the mindset of not assuming folks' identity, but asking them, right? Yes. And so how he thought he was, like, you know, making fun of me or calling me out or whatever, or trying to embarrass me, I was like, let me reframe this. Thank you, actually. Yeah. Because today I'm identifying as a male. How about yourself? And I think that that's something that us as queer folks, like you had mentioned, it's a slow process for us to constantly wake up and be confident and knowing, you know, I'm going to dress how I want to, or I'm going to identify how I want to, and I'm not going to have to worry about how other people feel or how uncomfortable it makes them.
For sure.
And that's just so, so true. And a lot of folks I know that experience that.
Yeah, I really wish that people would ask everyone, and we haven't done it this time around, so we're like
maybe
terrible.
We should. We'll do an intro. Yeah. And we'll do it. Yeah.
PGPs, yo. Yeah. But
when we exit.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. It's a mystery until the end. But I remember several years ago, I was in couples therapy, and I sat down with my partner at the time, who was a very kind of like femme presenting person. And we both sat there down on this really like old, rusty, musty couch. And I was the person that got asked what my, like, how would I like to be referred to? And I remember being like, "Hey, just can you also ask my partner this question if you're going to ask it to me?" Right. So there's all these things, like, exactly as you're saying, where it's like, let's ask everyone. But the clothes thing.
Yeah.
Like, with youth experiencing homelessness, clothes are one of the only things that they have access to really, like, inhabit their identities. Mm. They become their home. Mm. Often, you know, youth are not connected with healthcare in the same way that people who might be employed, or not to say that youth experiencing homelessness aren't employed, but there is a lower rate of employment. So to speak to that, you know, they don't have access to the medical care. They don't have haven't navigated that system before either. They haven't got the supports. So it's really interesting that clothing can be so, so vital and important. And I have to say, I know, Helen, that you spend a lot of time in that clothing closet that we have here at Spy, but it's so rad, and I'm so glad we have it. It's so good.
Yeah, and like wrapping that conversation about like biases and stigmas, like I remember going to LGBTQ plus center the new one that they built in West Hollywood for the youth. And I was trained that, you know, just because you express yourself in the way you dress does not necessarily mean that you're quote unquote gay or lesbian, you know, or queer, you know, and how there's three different components. Like there's what you identify as gender wise, like gender identity. And then there's like gender expression. Uh-huh. And then there's your like sexual preference. And I feel like that's what a lot mm-hmm. of people don't understand, that there's just these different components. And of course we can go all day to train, you know, society about this, but like just how there's different components, and just how Andrew mentioned, like, you know, you just can't assume because you just never know. And mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily only have to go for like queerness. It can just be in general, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Look at Helen knowing all the terms. So she paid attention in the training. Shout out to LGBT Center for that.
I think this is, we've talked to like a little bit about some things, but I think we can transition into talking about how programming, how does this directly relate? So now that clothes is like such a good, wow, my mind is like a little bit now spinning of like how we can build out a clothing program that actually specifically supports queer youth in our programming and more intentional around that. Something that I've never thought about until right this moment. So maybe Andrew, you can speak to some of the gaps and what you guys are, what's going on here at SPY for LGBTQ plus youth.
Yeah, so like we mentioned, like James mentioned, you know, a lot of folks who are experiencing homelessness also may identify as LGBTQ, and we're noticing it also here at our center, right? A lot of our youth also may identify as LGBTQ, and then you know what? A lot of our staff actually identify as queer. So I think that was kind of coming up for us. I was having a lot of conversation with our fellow queer staff members about like, you know, how are our queer youth feeling in this space? We work with some queer youth and we often check in with them about, do they feel safe in this space? Is there anything else we can do to maybe make them feel more comfortable? Things such as the bathroom, right, that James is working on to be more inclusive. Those are things that we were seeing that were missing, right? And so something that kind of like started that because we were seeing missing gaps, I decided to write a proposal for a grant, and I got the grant. This is actually the first time I'm telling James. So James, so this is announcement. This is like, you know, breaking news right now. So we got the grant to basically focus more on intentional queer programming here at Safe Place for Youth.
No way.
Yes.
Derek, if everyone could see my face right now.
We'll take a picture and add it to the you know, and it's amazing. And it's amazing that, you know, folks want to fund this, you know, these type topics and these issues. And so basically from that, we're hoping that this grant will basically start the conversation amongst our youth, amongst our staff, amongst our community about how can we be more intentional with supporting folks who identify as LGBT and queer? And then how do we bring more awareness and basically celebrate it, you know? Let's celebrate it now. I'm over the tolerance.
Yeah.
I'm over the acceptance. Like, let's celebrate this. Mm-hmm. You know, this month is Black History Month. We're celebrating, you know, the African-American community. Why are we not celebrating other types of communities, such as LGBT communities? So I'm so excited with this grant. Some of the ideas or some of the thoughts that we proposed were obviously having some type of groups, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a women's group. We have other types of group that are catered to different communities. So something that's an ongoing group where our members here can feel safe. Mm-hmm. Other things that came up were talking about these stories or these narratives that are often told that are stereotypes or that are negative, and they're not true. And so one way to combat that is we're going to do a digital storytelling project. So from the lens and from the experiences of youth experiencing homelessness, and how can we combat those negative media, all of those, you know, demystifying basically all of these things so that we can tell the true stories of our youth and that they can showcase that, you know, I'm resilient.
Yeah.
You know, I have goals. This is just maybe a moment in my life, but you know, I got this. I'm continuing to move forward. And I think that that's so inspiring. And that's a story that's never hardly ever told. And then the last piece was regarding this community event. So we're going to do an intergenerational drag brunch.
No way.
Yeah.
So,
basically
bad.
The storytelling project will culminate at this drag brunch where we can showcase these stories and then we can invite youth and staff and our community members and raise awareness, but also celebrate our identity. And that's something that I feel like was really missing. And so we put that out there. Yeah. We got the grant. We just found out last week. And so now it's all about collaborating with different people. I've reached out to different folks to help support with this. And I really want it to be a whole organizational wide effort, not just, in one department.
That's incredible. Wow, Andrew, thank you for putting in that work. And it takes people with this kind of drive to kind of like move these things forward. I'm so excited for what we're going to be able to offer our members and the kind of spaces we're going to create. This is incredible.
So what I'm hearing is James is going to be part of the drag event. MC, maybe. what other ways? Maybe I want to hear thoughts of what other ways now that we have this momentum going about, we know that this is prevalent within our community. We know that this is a lot of who our members identify as. What are some ideas or what are some ways in which maybe folks who maybe don't identify with this community can build allyship or collaborations?
I think like one big way was because yesterday we actually had a conversation about this at a friend's place, and it was just like a lot of people together were just talking, and what I heard was a lot was that the other group isn't getting a voice. You know what I mean? So it's like if you have any sort of opinion, you're kind of like, a bigot or this or that, right? And it's not just in LGBTQ, it's also in race and all these different things. And I always say this for all different subjects, is we need to be able to have open discussions where we don't, automatically identify someone as, a bigot because of their opinions, because their opinions come from a system, and how they were raised and taught. So in order to be able to, because it started off with race, and it started off how we were talking about segregation and integration. And I was talking about didn't understand me, but I was like, forceful integration is not the best way of doing things, and I was talking about how the African-American community is actually doing much worse than they were in the 60s because of this forceful integration, because just like slavery, okay, you're free, but there's no thing set in stone, there's no plan. And it's just like, you're just out there just doing your own thing, trying to figure it out in a system that wasn't designed for you. Mm-hmm. So I think, having open discussions will allow everyone to be able to just, understand each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. I think, that will help, bring more allies if they feel that they can speak their mind, mm-hmm.
This is something I think about often, but this idea, I think we should, bringing back to allyship and how do we take what happens at SPY and in these spaces that are safe and really intentionally inclusive and building out those spaces. They're doing that, but how do we take it beyond just SPY, right? And exit out into the community and continue the work outside of these walls. Mm-hmm. But that we also should allow room for kind of like graceful allow people the ability to make mistakes and create dialogue around that in a way that's, I don't know, that's something I struggle with. Do you guys have thoughts or ideas on this topic?
Yes. Like they're not necessarily fully formed.
Yeah, totally.
Which is like, I think how speaks to how people have to kind of very delicately move around these topics, because it does involve a lot of people being hurt, and people don't really like to hurt people or be hurt themselves, right? But I think building out infrastructure for youth-led research and advocacy is a huge part of it, because that creates a safe environment for training understanding, development, and that can be put and used in different kind of like in all across society in different like sectors. So that to me seems like a good starting place, and that can be allies and people who identify within the LGBTQ community. So that for me is definitely one of the big ones. It's just aiming to involve and engage young people.
Well, I'm going to use some examples too. We didn't go around. We did, like, I feel like this is one of the first times we didn't announce our pronouns at the beginning. My, she, hers, Robin. And one thing I'm thinking of, like, the Venn meetings, right? So the Venn is Youth Network, and we do these community meetings, and then everyone announces their pronoun, or we request that people announce their pronouns as they do introductions. Yeah. And have you guys witnessed, like, every, you know, there'll always be kind of like the random community member that's like, I'm straight or something, you know, they're like totally mind blown. Like I've seen like a lot of people just like fall apart during that, process. It's
really awkward sometimes.
And but then it's like, well, but it's also their first time, being in a situation like that or having that question asked. Right. This frequently happens to me too. If I travel outside of LA, if I'm outside of the youth world, the social service world, that people are just like, you know, they have the privilege of walking around, with identifying or like presenting as the pronouns that they identify with, right? That's always an interesting thing, and I think like, but it also presents a good time of just being like that part of the pronoun process of announcing your pronouns is an educational tool, right?
Moment.
Right? And that's a little bit part of why I think we all do it
And while it may have been
the main reason, but part of it,
and while maybe that person was uncomfortable in that moment, right, there's growth in uncomfortableness, right? Like that person, I don't know how they identify, grew from that and learned like, hey, like my privilege of not having to know my gender pronouns, right? Now I'm going to like think about it a little bit more intentionally. And so that person learned right there. And so I think that there's still power in that, whatever moment that was. Cause I often see that, especially with my young people, like when I would do it with my students, some of my students be like, I'm straight. Like that whole thing, like having to defend their sexual orientation. I'm like, not talking about that piece, just talking about gender identity. So I think there's also a piece regarding education, right? We need to also, like Helen so clearly, specifically, like divided up those different components. I think it's very important.
Yes, I was about to dig into that.
Yeah.
It just all goes back to like what I was mentioning earlier. Just because I'm dressed more feminine today does not mean I identify as a girl, you know. I can probably identify as a boy, but I'm expressing myself feminine today, but that's because I decided to today, you know. That's where that fluidity again comes into play, and like things like that. But it's just so what we can create that very affirming environment and just be very accepting and welcoming of everybody, you know, and how they want to express themselves.
Yes. And I wonder if I can like lean into something that has come up for me recently, just with the whole going around and sharing pronouns. And it's something that I didn't necessarily think was going to affect me, and it has. And that is the appropriation of trans culture while we are sharing pronouns. And I think what that's coming from is there has been an amazing like wave of what is this generation called? The young Generation Z. Yeah. Generation Z.
We're already in Z. What's
Gen
after
Z's.
That?
But they tend to come across like so open-minded. And I have, you know, I have transitioned and been on hormones in front of young people who have just been like, whatever, like, I don't mind, which has been great. And however, sometimes when we go around and share pronouns, someone who has never struggled with their identity or never had a never had an experience where if I said let's say someone's like, you can use any pronoun, and I'm like, well, actually, if I refer to you as she, you wouldn't know who I was talking about, and you've never had this experience, and actually that's actually putting the person who does identify as transgender through a lot by you appropriating their use of pronouns, because it is damaging. And so I think that we need to be really careful about this is literally about privilege again. Mm-hmm. If you have this privilege of knowing who you are and you feel comfortable with people referring to you in a certain way, please speak it, because there are people who don't have that comfortability. And so that would be my thing that I would say has been something that's come up for me recently.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I've seen this happen. It's something that I've been like, I'm like, oh, that's like, yeah. And putting more like words and thought behind that is really something I appreciate as well.
I really appreciate the thought about really building infrastructure and including youth within research and advocacy. Mm-hmm. There's this type of research called YPAR, which is Youth Participatory Action Research, that I used to be a part of when I was a youth. And I love that type of research. And it basically includes the youth as a part of the research, meaning that the youth are developing the questions like, how can we make SPY, for example, more inclusive towards the LGBT and queer community, right? And so the youth will then research their peers to figure out what is missing, what is coming up, and then develop recommendations to then present to the adults or to the community about, hey, this is actually what we feel like is needed. So talking about Generation Z or whatever, right? They're the experts. They know what they need here at their center. This is their center. We're here just merely to support. So maybe this type of a group, this LGBT queer group, can really be that kind of focus group or that leadership group where they're like, hey, this is what we're experiencing. This is what we want. How can you, as Safe Place for You, support me in that development, right? Yeah. I think that that's really, really important.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's like, but I wanted to like talk about, you know, kind of like you guys were talking about, like how we can create allyship, mm-hmm. right? I mean, how can someone be an ally when they don't even have a voice themselves? You know what I mean? So it's like, and also like, you know, one thing I notice a lot in, you know, the African American community, which is totally something that I totally understand, is like, okay, if I support them, are they going to be taking away from my pool of my pie, a piece of the pie? You know, it's like, how do we make sure that when we support these things, you know, because I see this happen a lot, is, you know, as African Americans support other groups of people, what's happening is their piece of the pie is just being eaten, you know? So it's not like we're supporting and these other groups that have all the power are losing their power. No, it's just like the ones that already don't have the power are just losing their piece of the pie. So how can we make sure that it's a allyship where we can support y'all, but at the same time, while we're also going out and getting our own, because that's a struggle in itself. You know, it's like, how do people get time when they're struggling in their own world and trying to, you know, get for their own team or whatever you want to call it? You know what I mean? But at the, I don't know. It's just like, it's just an interesting thing that people talk a lot about.
I think that, one thing that people misunderstand is that it has to be us or them. Mm-hmm. It's us and them, I think. Like, there's room for everybody. And I think we live in a country where we have an abundance of, like, what people need. And it's just a matter of distributing it more evenly amongst everybody. And
no, I agree with that. But yeah. My thing is, that's not what's... That's kind of, like, it's not really happening, you know? This whole idea of... Even, like, this idea of people of color. You know what I mean? And the thing is, like, I can't even really speak on behalf of the African-American community because I'm first generation from Africa, you know? And it's like, I didn't go through what they went through, but I can see it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I can see, like, how they are literally, their communities are being used in order to, not necessarily intentionally being used, you know what I mean? It's just, okay, they're getting their freedom or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just, how do we make sure that these other smaller groups, you know, the, mm-hmm. are also still thriving while the LGBT community is thriving. You know what I mean? Because it's like you said, there's a big piece of the pie, but this other group, the 1%, isn't allowing us to tap into their pie. They're like, okay, you want some more LGBT, you guys want freedom? Oh, Latinos, you guys want freedom? Asians, you guys want freedom? Okay, we're going to take away from African Americans, you know, and that's what's going on. That's what it seems.
Yeah, and I think, thank you for speaking to it, right? I think first and foremost, and it's, I think it's just the case, and it's something that we need to acknowledge, that some people aren't as resourced as others. And it's like quite that simple. And it's because, the, you know, systemic and structural issues that keep people under-resourced. And when you do not have the resources to support, how are you going to support, yeah, right? So just speaking to that, I think we would love it, Carlos, if that was the case, that it could be both. And just the way that, like, we have to navigate society means that some people are going to have an easier time and be more able to support than others.
Yeah, definitely.
I think what you were just mentioning, Nathaniel, just kind of reminds me of this idea regarding conquer and divide, right? Where the folks who are in power will conquer folks like marginalized communities or people of color and then divide them so that they're working against each other, mm-hmm, or that they're fighting for all these little crumbs, when in actuality, we need to be collaborating, building coalitions, and then learning how the system is working so that we can fight that system. Because really, mm-hmm, you know, a lot of different communities are being oppressed by this system, right?
Yeah.
So it's, how do we understand that system? How do we build coalition across these lines to then empower each other, right? Yeah. And I think that that's like kind of what we've been trying to do for how many centuries, yeah, right?
We're going to have to keep trying. And it's to our benefit, because all of those communities that are marginalized are actually, the makeup of them is more than the people that are in power.
Martel, in his episode, it was his like third hour on the job, he said this great thing. Says, because someone, we always say the system is broken. And he was like, I'm going to counter that fact and say it's not broken. It's working exactly how it was designed. So learning how it works and figuring out how to dismantle it. So
yeah, it needs a redesign.
It needs to be demolished.
And so maybe it needs to start there.
Yeah.
Is like, I noticed that, you know, oftentimes, and even me growing up, I would often be like, oh, well, why are they choosing to be that way? Or why can't they just get a job and you know, save money and get this? Or, you know, that whole pick up yourself by the bootstraps mentality, when, like you had mentioned, James, like, not all of us have that privilege, right? All of us are born into different kind of situations. And so I think it's very important regarding that piece that maybe we should work harder on to talk about with our youth, to know that, hey, homelessness is a systemic thing, right? Racism is a systemic thing that we all need to like know a little bit more about so we can figure out how to combat it.
Yeah. So let's be mindful of everyone's time. We've been going for a bit, which is so exciting. Maybe we can just all, if everyone has one final thought on allyship or things that we'd want to see happen within our roles as advocates, our roles as future leaders in this space, and as the program, like just like simple things or, you know, things listeners can do since we have some.
I don't know if I'm correct in thinking this, but one thing that I like to do in order to show that I'm an ally or in order to continue being an ally is listen. And so when someone tells me that they want a certain pronoun used, you know, then I use that pronoun and I listen to, I also ask, like, if I don't know something, you know, I do my best to ask, and that's kind of how I express my allyship.
Would you be so kind as to share your pronouns at the end?
Yes, I go by he, him, his. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Hi. My name is James. I also use James as my pronoun, which means some people can kind of get confused with that. So it can be like James said, or, you know, it's quite interesting. I'll often get they'd, but it is James. For me, I think moving forward, like, the work that we are doing at SPY is so special. So if there is a way that we can keep, like, Andrew applying for the, you know, this grant, I mean, that's fantastic. But, like, literally greeting people, I think, and our members, you know, daily, and having these conversations, mm-hmm, and creating relationships that are safe enough to talk about these things, mm-hmm, and to explore these things, that, mm-hmm, is my hope. I, mm-hmm, hope that we continue creating safe, meaningful, trusting relationships that people can lean into.
For sure. You know, that's very important, this relationship idea, because I think that's what makes SPY so special, right? Is the relationships that we've developed with our youth. You know, I love it when our youth will check in with us. Hey, how you doing? Hey, good to see you. I like that jacket. You know, how's this been? And I'm like, wow, like, that's so interesting, because, you know, I'm so used to checking in with different youth and seeing how they're doing. But when they check in with me and like, hey, how are you doing? Like, you look a little stressed. And I'm like, I actually am, you know, and me kind of like being able to be vulnerable with our youth, that really proves like this relationship does really work. So I'm Andrew. I go by he, him, his, or I like to also say I like a hey girl, hey pronoun. So, you know, if you want to call me girl or mama, I love it. It's so endearing. But I really like this idea of stemming off of what James was mentioning, even Nathaniel, and a little bit of Carlos, where maybe it's all about creating that space to have these dialogues, to listen to one another, but to also ask questions in a way that's like, I'm asking this question out of general curiosity, not because this is how I think. It's just because I'm wanting to learn more, right? Coming from a place of trying to understand. And I think that there's not a lot of opportunities like that for folks who identify as one identity and others to kind of communicate and listen to each other and educate one another. So maybe that's where it starts.
Yeah, no, I agree. Hello, everyone. My name's Nathaniel. I go by he, him, his. And yeah, that's my thing. You know, like my thing is always about I'm a curious person and I like to understand, you know, because if I don't understand, it just doesn't, you know, I'm just like lost. And so I'd rather be, you know, in the know. So like my thing is, yeah, I think we need to have healthy, you know, discussions, because these are very important things, you know, because if these healthy discussions aren't happening, then it's not actually even beneficial for the LGBT community, because it's not built on, the base isn't built on concrete, you know, it's built on sand, you know, it's just built because, okay, you have to do this, and then I'm like, okay, but in the inside or whatever, people internally, that's not what they believe. And so we got to make sure that we first and foremost understand, you know, from both sides too, because I feel like if, you know, I'm not here to question, then people are just freely roaming and just doing their own thing, right? Like one thing I see from what I can speak from is like, let's say in the African-American community, right? Like if we're not, you know, checking and questioning our direction, our purpose of where we're going, then it's kind of like we're just going in circles and it's just more of just culture, you know, we're just having fun or whatever. And so it's like, this isn't something, you know, I don't believe that being LGBTQ is just an identity for like, you know, to have fun or to do this or that, you know, there's something real deep behind it. Yeah. And so, you know, we all need to understand both people in that position, because I'm sure, I mean, I meet a lot of people who might not even understand why they are, you know, it's just like, it just feels good. I just like to do this, you know? And so people really need to dive deep, because they need, if you don't understand what you're doing, then it's kind of like you're messing up other people's position, you know, that might be LGBT that do understand, you know, and it's just like you're being a bad representative or whatever. Same what I say with in the African communities, like, you know, the problem we're in the same position we're at is because we just have a ton of bad leaders, you know, because they're not guiding us in the right direction. So then other groups of people are like, yo, like you guys are just like using up resource or whatever, not really, you know, contributing. So it's kind of like that's what we need to do and have those open discussions, both, you know, between LGBTQ communities plus Q communities and people that aren't in that community, but also within the LGBTQ community. You know, I think it needs to be healthy discussions around where are we going, you know, or this or that, you know. And I don't know if that's what, you know, goes or happens, but I feel like in every group we all need to move forward with a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm.
So one quote that you just kind of reminded me of was, if you don't know where you come from, you don't know where you're going, right? And I think that that's so powerful. When I first learned about my identity, not just my racial identity, but my queer identity, meaning that queer folks for generations have been resilient and powerful and have helped each other and have been so successful, It wasn't until I learned that history then that I knew I can equally be successful. I can equally be powerful. I can live past 30, 35. I can live a healthy life, right? Because the media always told me that, you know, oh, if you're LGBT, you're going to die of XYZ, right? But knowing the other narrative, the powerful narrative, changed my life. And so I think that that's very important for a lot of youth, including adults, to know. It's like, you know, what is the history of our identity? What's the power of identity?
Helen, I use she, her, hers pronouns. And, you know, when Andrew was asking, like, what y'all can support in imagining, I envision, you know, what the grant may be. I know the Arts and Healing Room have the Culver City Theater, little theater, you know, reserved for, like, art shows. So what I'm envisioning is maybe having, like, maybe work with Gary and build like this impactful like theater around LGBTQ.
Yes, James and I are just like, what?
And you know, having like a community event, inviting everybody, because these are two critical issues that are, you know, happening out there right now, you know, LGBTQ and homelessness, and now how we're incorporating both amongst our youth. And I feel like we can have a dialogue there too, like 30 minute dialogue, and then, you know, this impactful play on LGBTQ mixed with homelessness, and then
I love that. It's this edutainment, right? Yeah. I'm being entertained, but I'm also being educated.
And maybe that digital arts narrative story,
digital storytelling,
just play it
okay,
out there.
Okay, so now she has a screening, the digital stories.
Andrew may screen, you know, the digital arts lab project that he has in mind.
Yes,
there.
At this type of show, to educate in different forms, different medias, performative, short film, music, dialogue, podcast. Right, we got to hit them on all platforms. Amazing.
So Robin, she, hers, and I'm going to keep it short, but I'm going to say that there was so much amazing conversation and dialogue and learning to be had here. And I'm so grateful for that. And so one thing people can do is share this with friends, family, colleagues, because there's so much to be learned from what just happened, and go to drag brunch, right?
Drag brunch.
Yeah,
that's,
see you at drag brunch.
Yeah. Since we're putting it out there, it's going to happen, right? We're putting it out there in the universe. And also, too, maybe we can have folks be able to connect with us. So if they're interested in getting connected regarding more queer programming, or they have resources or ideas or workshops, you can reach me at andrewg@safeplaceforyouth.org.
And jamese@safeplaceforyouth.org.
Yay. Thank you guys for being our
guests. Thank you, everyone.
Goodbye, Dogtown. Bye, everyone.
Later, Dogtown.
Bye.
This podcast is produced by Lensco in partnership with Safe Place for Youth and funded by the Department of Mental Health, Innovations 2.